I'm Anthony Pastore. Welcome to UBS On Air. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died on September 18, 2020, after serving for 27 years on the bench, championing for race and gender equality. She leaves behind a legacy of resilience and inspiration for millions. The question now is, what's next for the Supreme Court? Is there a precedent set for past situations like this one? Will President Trump get a nominee confirmed before the election? And does Ginsburg's death change the political landscape? Joining me today for this discussion is Shane Lieberman from the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy. It is Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. Shane, first of all, thanks for joining me and glad to speak to you about this really important topic. Thanks for being here.
No, thank you for having me, Anthony. Always good to be with you.
You too, Shane. So I know that, you know, you have been busy in an election year such as this one, and then a shock of the death of Justice Ginsburg comes and makes you have to kind of rethink how it's all going to go. And those are all the questions that I have for you today. But I thought maybe we could start off with talking about her contribution to the Supreme Court with her many years on the bench. What were her accomplishments that you could share with us and the legacy that she's leaving behind?
Yeah, well, first of all, again, thanks for having me. It's good to be with you. I hope you're well and everyone else is well. You know, with a incredible career like hers, you know, as you noted, focused on gender equality and women's rights, she has so many accomplishments. You know, even if you disagree with her philosophy, you have to recognize that she is a brilliant legal mind who broke a lot of barriers. You know, she was the second woman on the U.S. Supreme Court. She was the, I believe, sixth Jewish American on the court. You know, who graduated from Columbia Law School first in her class. I think besides, you know, the accomplishments and voice she gave to gender equality and women's rights, I think what we also need to notice is, you know, her relationship with former Justice Scalia is important because, you know, he was one of the most conservative judges we ever saw, and she was one of the most liberal, but they were good friends. And they were both powerful voices, and they were both powerful voices without yelling or shouting. So I think it's important to note that, you know, you don't have to yell and shout to get your point across. Have a thoughtful conversation, as these two justices did. And I think when we look at their legacy, I would hope we all take that into mind of how to be thoughtful, respectful, and powerful at the same time.
Right. Especially with today's divisiveness, Shane, something I think we can all agree on in the landscape. And I read that the two of them would go to lunch every single Friday together. And I thought that was such a really nice thing to think about. Despite their political differences, they remained friends and could talk to each other in a really meaningful way. Something that I think many of us should consider doing, especially in our personal lives. Shane, going forward, something that, and just to shift gears a little bit here about what's the, you know, the next steps for the Supreme Court, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and President Trump have both indicated that they'd like to see an appointment made to the court as soon as possible. And Trump said that he would actually announce his pick this coming Saturday afternoon. I wanted to ask you what your expectations are, maybe timeline-wise, for the filling of this vacancy and the likelihood that it's going to happen prior to the election.
Yeah, so as you noted, we expect President Trump to nominate someone Saturday, which would leave just about 40 days until the election. So from the nomination, there'll be hearings. And those hearings will have a vote in the Judiciary Committee to approve the nominee. Then it will go to the full Senate floor. In previous times, you have seen a justice approved in that 40-day time period. I believe Sandra Day O'Connor was, but she was pretty much a unanimous pick. Obviously, this is going to be much more controversial. Democrats are looking at every way they can think of to slow down the Senate and the process as a whole. You saw yesterday Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer object to the Intelligence Committee holding hearings on election safety, election fraud. And so you just see that the works are going to be tried to gum up. So I think a vote before the election is absolutely possible, but it could happen, you know, in between the and when the new Congress is seated in that lame duck period we have in November December. So there's also thought about, you know, Republicans getting to the point where they have the vote after the election, because that may be better for enthusiasm levels for the election themselves, or do they hold it right before? So there's still not a definitive timeline on when the vote will be, but the Republicans are definitely moving to do it pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. It just may be a coin toss of whether it happens right before or after the election.
Right. And maybe you can actually clear something up for us, Shane, because I know that in speaking with colleagues and friends, the history of what happened back in 2016, when Scalia did pass away and President Obama at the time was trying to appoint someone, and that was in February of the election year, and McConnell then said that there would be no replacement. And, you know, of course, now he's saying they want a new judge on the bench as soon as possible. And then even yesterday, Mitt Romney came out, who has historically been speaking out against the president. Now he agreed with him and McConnell. So is there a precedent here for this type of situation, or is it more political posturing in an election year?
Well, I think everyone has precedent that they want. You know, if you look back historically, you can find something that you can point to prove your point. I was a history major in college, and one of the first things I think I learned was history is written by the victors. Mm. So McConnell, as being Senate Majority Leader, he has that power to control the Senate's agenda, which he did back in 2016 and said, we're not going to vote. And he's doing that now. He obviously points to differences between that circumstance and today. He would say that, you know, well, in 2016, it was a Democratic president and a Republican Senate. So you had a divided government here at that time. Now, today, fast forward, you have Republicans controlling both the White House and Senate. So there is a difference. Also, McConnell is pointing to Chuck Schumer's comments back in 2016, where you know, Chuck Schumer essentially said, you know, let the people vote, and McConnell will say, well, look what happened in 2016 when I took that path. In 2018, Republicans gained seats in the Senate, so the people did vote and spoke. Mm-hmm. So trying to use that, I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this is concerning for what it means going forward in Senate. There are some people talking about how, you know, if you have another divided scenario, even if it's in the first or second year of that presidency, you know, a Senate of the different party may never take up a Supreme Court justice, which is a very concerning thought to enter our minds, because that could lead to 4 or 8 years with a vacancy on the Supreme Court.
Right.
So, you know, this is overall kind of a very concerning trend. But hopefully, you know, we can move past this and move forward for the good of the country.
Right. It'll be really interesting and good to see what comes from this over the next couple of weeks. So if President Trump, then, Shane, and the Senate GOP are able to confirm a nominee before the election, or, you know, the next president or Congress are actually seated, what does that hold for the future of the Supreme Court and its impact on public policy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The court, you know, will move to the right with a Trump nominee getting seated to replace RBG. You know, so obviously cases that have to deal with abortion or the Second Amendment come to mind. But I think we should also, you know, keep in mind that by and large, the majority of Supreme Court decisions are bipartisan, or, you know, are not a 5-4 vote. You know, earlier this year, both Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Gorsuch joined the justices that were nominated by Democratic presidents for a 6-3 decision. So, you know, the court isn't as partisan as it is being portrayed today, but obviously they make very partisan decisions in a 5-4, and those are the ones that we hear about usually on the TV and the internet and read about. So, you know, it will take a tack to the right if a Trump nominee goes forward, but you shouldn't feel that is changing everything wholesale.
Right. Yeah, I remember there were a lot of surprises in the summertime when the court extended the 1964 Civil Rights Act to protect LGBTQ employees, and they also protected the so-called Dreamers, the young immigrants who were brought to the country as children. And I think that took a lot of people by surprise, but made us think what you just said, Shane, that it's not as partisan as sometimes we think it is, especially when these confirmation hearings are happening and becomes very partisan. And then when they're actually sitting on the bench, they do what's right for the law of the land. And I think that's something we should all remember. And I'm glad you reminded us of that. So let me ask you then, Shane, here's the big question, right? On Saturday, we'll know. But between now and then, who do you think the potential nominees could be that Trump will put up? And how would you assess the viability of some of these so-called frontrunners? I know that he has said he would put a woman on the bench, but that's about all we've received from the president at this point.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of top-notch names out there who are all talented legal minds. A lot of people are circling Amy Coney Barrett as the lead contender. She's clerked for former Justice Scalia, was a law professor at Notre Dame, and more recently she's been a sitting justice on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. And right now, I think everyone considers her the top contender. I think Barbara Legault, who is a judge on the 11th Circuit Court, stands a very strong chance as well. Prior to being on the Circuit Court of Appeals, she was a justice in the Florida Supreme Court. Another person whose name has come up is Alison Jones Rushing. She's a justice on the Fourth Circuit. She's the youngest of these three that I just named, so she would have a very long tenure, that's something that excites Republicans, to have justice be nominated and in their minds, knowing this is someone who can serve for 30, 40 plus years. They like that because, it brings continuity and assurance that they'll have a conservative justice. I would say that because she's the youngest of the three I just named, she may be the long shot because she has the least experience. But you can't count her out. And there are others, but I think those are the top three everyone's thinking about right now.
Right. Yeah. So I guess we'll know more a couple of days from now. But thanks, Shane. We appreciate that. And my last question for you is, clearly this whole situation that we're in throws another dynamic into an already dramatic election season. So how does RBG's passing affect or potentially affect the presidential and congressional campaigns, as well as the strategies that are employed by each separate party?
Yeah, obviously this is a national event that gets people, their interest level up and helps them remind them what's at stake when they go to vote. I think Republicans, conventional wisdom would say that maybe Republicans benefit because when you look back in 2018, when Justice Kavanaugh and his nomination process actually bolstered Republicans in 2018. Now you're thinking to yourself, well, in 2018, Republicans lost the House. Yes, they did. And they lost a lot of seats. But it probably would have been worse if the Kavanaugh confirmation wasn't going through. But then also look at the Senate, Republicans gained seats. So overall, that was a positive experience for Republicans. But remember, 2018 was a midterm election when President Trump wasn't on the ballot. So enthusiasm was somewhat low for Republicans to begin with. So this just helped bring it up. I think with President Trump on the ballot, there's no lack of enthusiasm from Republicans. So overall, maybe a modest bump for them, but I don't think it creates a huge tidal wave of enthusiasm and gets out the vote, which would have been there anyways.
Right, exactly.
I think maybe get some, Americans who think to themselves, I do want a conservative justice. Maybe they were a voter that hadn't made up their mind. But, I don't see this being, as of yet, a big positive for Republicans. And I think we're still waiting to see some polling to get more feedback on that. For Democrats, it's just another boost of enthusiasm in their camp. Mm-hmm. President Trump is a very divisive character. anyone you talk to has an opinion about him, right? So on the Democratic side, kind of same thing. Anyone who is going to turn out to vote against President Trump, this is, you know, one more reason to, but it's not going to probably drive up enthusiasm wholesale. And, you know, maybe it does with some groups that were, maybe their voting would have been a little bit lower participation rate, like Latinos or African Americans, but I don't think it's going to vastly change it. But we're going to kind of see who is nominated, see if that, what kind of interest that gins up. Overall, right now, I think it's, you know, not a hurt or help for either side, but, you know, we're going to see how hearings go, how contentious they are, mm-hmm. and what comes out of those hearings, and maybe that will change the scenario. But right now, you know, I think it doesn't change the dynamic or election results. You know, obviously it changes the dynamic because it shifts some of the attention from other things like the economy and COVID. But I don't, at this moment, see it changing the result.
Right. Yeah, and if we learned anything from those Kavanaugh hearings, it can be very contentious. So that just really just seems like it just happened in my memory bank here, especially in this crazy 2020 year when basically time has flown out the window and nobody even knows what day it is. Everything feels like it's rolling from one to the next. But it'll be really interesting to see. You know, you mentioned the polls, Shane, and I think once we start to see those, I'm imagining in the next week or so, it'll be really interesting to see if this particular situation of RBG's passing is going to shift the political landscape a little bit. But we'll see. I guess it'll be a really interesting way to navigate as we head into the last 40 days before the election here.
Yeah, no, it's obviously going to be interesting. You know, when you thought there wasn't anything else 2020 could throw at your way, you know, this is what happens. But, you know, to your point, the Kavanaugh hearings in some ways feel like yesterday, but in other ways feel like 30 years ago. So right. That's, I think, kind of the world we're living in right now. It's exciting. It's also a lot going on for us to be aware of, so we can all be better informed.
Right. History is being rewritten every single day during 2020, and this is no exception. So, Shane, thanks very much for taking us through, and always, your insights are so valuable, and we appreciate everything you and your colleagues down in Washington, D.C. are doing for us. Shane, thanks very much.
Thank you, Anthony. Always good to be with you. Stay safe and look forward to joining you soon.
You too, Shane. And for more information on everything we discussed today, you can take a look at our website, ubs.com/election watch. There's some recent articles related to the conversation that Shane and I had today regarding the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and what comes next for the Supreme Court, plus everything you need to know about the upcoming election and, of course, how it potentially could impact your portfolio depending on the outcomes and the different scenarios that are presented in front of us. Again, I want to thank Shane Lieberman from the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy for joining me today. We hope you all have a wonderful day, and don't forget to get out and vote in 40 days. In the meantime, I'm Anthony Pastore from New York City. Have a great day, everyone. We'll speak to you soon.
This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. Neither UBS Financial Services, Inc. nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. In providing wealth management services to clients, we offer both investment advisory and brokerage services, which are separate and distinct and differ in material ways. For information, including the different laws and contracts that govern, visit ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.